know this is something that is being monitored by our team?
That was Sarah Sanders a few weeks ago saying that the president and the White House were monitoring cryptocurrency. Well, we got evidence of that this week when U.S. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin said on Friday that the Financial Stability Oversight Council, almost like that task force in South Korea that nobody had heard about.
Exactly.
A government body that assesses financial system risks has formed a working group focused on cryptocurrencies. Actually, I believe that should be systemic risk, but who am I to say? We are very focused on cryptocurrencies, Mnuchin explained, pointing to discussions with other regulators within the U.S. government and later stating, quote, we want to make sure that bad people cannot use these currencies to do bad things. This was at the Economic Club in Washington, D.C. And as some people have said, what's the goodness of having a club if you can't keep other people out? Mnuchin added that the issue was one of the U.S. government would engage with the G20 international group as well. As previously reported, Mnuchin's French counterpart called for more action from the G20 in December, highlighting a risk of speculation at the time. And let's hear the words straight from the horse's mouth, if you will.
We are very focused on cyber currencies. There's cryptocurrencies like a Bitcoin, which, effectively it's instead of euros or dollars, you have a different currency. There are central banks that are thinking of, instead of issuing cash, physical cash, issuing a digital currency. So, I mean, the Fed has contemplated and looked at, and I don't think they have any intention of doing this in the near term. You could issue digital dollars. The Fed and we don't think there's any need for that at this point.
Hey, he's going to hit a couple points here. The national digital currencies was one, and then he moves on.
There's a lot of speculation in this, and I want to make sure that consumers who are trading this understand the risks, because I am concerned that consumers could get hurt.
Well, point two is speculation.
We want to make sure that bad people cannot use these currencies to do bad things. So in the United States, and people may not realize this, under our laws, if you have a wallet to own bitcoins, that company has the same obligation as a bank to know your customer.
Point three was the money laundering. Maybe there was a point four here.
The IRS.
In the United States, we have rules that for money laundering, for all different types of things, we can track those activities. The rest of the world doesn't have that. So one of the things we will be working very closely with the G20 on is making sure that this doesn't become the Swiss numbered bank accounts.
Okay, so is Augie premonitioned there that he was going to get into the IRS? So we had the bad people doing things, we had know your customer, we had a few different things, speculation, worried about all that.
Was he talking about getting rid of paper currency or digital currency? I couldn't tell.
The Fed wasn't thinking about that right now. So, Augie, you have much to say. You go first.
Well, the smackdown is around the corner, and I mentioned it. And the smackdown is going to come this way. They're going to use digital currency for big numbers. So Bitcoin itself probably is going to be a bond support currency, if you will. And this running around, grabbing after multiple...
Can I explain that? Because I don't think anybody that was listening just captured what you said. Slow it down, restate it, and slow it down for the people.
Well, in order to gain some control, or a lot of control, when you have all these random currencies coming out of the woods, the trust factor is only going to be gained when there's a regulative body. And the argument's going to come between China and the United States. One of the two or both are going to decide what this is going to be. And when that happens, the burn down of the speculation is going to happen. The woods are going to catch on fire.
So what would have happened? Give us your vision of what would happen between those two powers.
Well, right now with the so-called leadership we have in this country, the Chinese are going to win this thing hands down, and we're going to be left with nothing.
And what are they winning?
What the Chinese are doing is they're anchoring whatever they do by building infrastructure all over the world, because they ran out of...
Come back to Bitcoin.
Okay.
You said they were going to, the U.S. and China was going to decide something. What would be a
they'll make
something
it,
they could
they'll, they'll to assure people that their investments in this currency, in that currency, whichever one you guys keep citing, the better currencies, they're going to decide which one those are. And they're going to say Bitcoin Cash or Bitcoin whatever. They're going to make whether you like it or not, they're going to make that decision.
How will they make that decision?
It'll be arbitrary.
You said something about bond back there. I'm trying to get you back to that one of your original.
Well, that's
statements.
Because the bonds are going to have to be backed by something that people trust. Municipal bonds are in trouble. The interest rates are not sufficient, so you're going to have the growth factor involved in this. When that happens, and the growth factor shows up in terms of these virtual currencies, they're going to use that as the argument to regulate that to make the growth constant. All these different things will happen, and they'll happen in a way that some people won't like.
See, now I take a different view to that because, I'm not a libertarian, and I'm definitely not a liberal, and I'm somewhat quasi-conservative, but I'm more of a capitalist. I think the people should determine which currencies survive and which ones don't. And I think government coming... The marketplace should decide, not the government, just like they did with gold. They made gold, 70 times more expensive than silver. Should the government come in and say, oh, no, let's go back to the gold standard?
There should be arguments that are always coming up. Arguments that are lost arguments.
Well, I'm just saying that, the government shouldn't have control over this. This is the people should have control, and that's what I get tired of hearing.
Should.
The government needs the control because I've never seen them control anything.
Let's move back and onto one of the other points because Lennart has to deal with this a lot. Anti-money laundering laws, the know your customer laws.
Very stringent.
Let me reintroduce everybody because people could have just been tuning in. We have Sabine Priestley, author, engineer, futurist thinker. We have fantasy science fiction romance novelist, prolific one at that. And we have Alex Solis Digital Assets, and we'll be sure and. SolisDigitalAssets.com. All right, we've got that. We have Augie, who can be recognized anywhere.
Just the Augie. The four-letter word is always good.
Well, and we have Andy.
However you use it.
GoldBug1, TradingView.com columnist. And now back to Lennart, who is going to tell us about anti-money laundering laws and know your customer laws. Because he has to deal with that as
That's
the chief
correct.
Technical officer of Byte Federal, the Bitcoin ATM company, ByteFederal.com.
Right. We do have a compliance officer, but it's amazing coming from the software side of things, technology where everything is always evolving. There is, software is one of the few places where there's really no government interference, and so it's a completely market-driven arena. It's amazing, entering the financial world, how stringent the policies are, especially in the U.S. And as you guys know, I was born in Eastern Germany, and there's a lot of police state reminiscence coming to my mind because we do have to almost take over the role of the police in a certain way. We have to look at who signs up. We have to do certain, we have to follow certain protocols that are given by the financial institution regulators that sometimes make you feel quite uneasy. But that's the law of the land.
Wait a minute. Why should this make you feel uneasy? Let me finish my point. Mm-hmm. Why don't we want you to have to know that stuff so that we know that human trafficking enterprises are
I can tell you. No, I can tell you frankly.
What I
mean is it's a job that actually belongs to the police, to be honest. It's something that the police
Wait a minute. Come on. Now, how can the police know your customers? Unless you get the idea.
It's not just that the police, how can they know my customers? How do they know people committing crimes, right? They do stakeouts, they investigate people's activities, crime activities. If someone just comes to my ATM and signs up, I have to start reporting on them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Hold on. If I go to Leonard and I say, Leonard, can I borrow $500? Do you have to report anything?
I have to start making records about
you. Forget the Bitcoin. If I just come to you and you say, hey,
no,
I want
of course not.
$1,
of course not.
$100 bills. You don't have to
no,
make
as a, no.
If I come to you and say, hey, I'll buy that 10 ounces of gold you have, do you have to have a record for that? No. But now all of a sudden, the government wants to regulate. The government wants to regulate digital currencies because you know what?
There's two misstatements right here. If he made a capital gain on that gold that he sold you, he has to report it.
Or a capital loss.
Right. And the idea that you that as
the problem is that if you are in a place like Eastern Germany or let's say the going even further back the Second World War, the government will never say, hey, we're trying to be evil and we're trying to do nefarious things. They'll always come with an argument for safety and protection of the people, and it's difficult.
Wait,
of course
you're giving me all these straw man arguments. The point is that if the police that you want to enforce the
Correct.
anti-human trafficking to keep young women or young children from being exploited, if they have a suspect, they need to be able to track his money or her money and how they do that.
Well, because
and if it was a bank, they would have to do it. Why shouldn't
I tell you, because the enactment of the U.S. Patriot Act, before that they were never able to do any of it. Because all of these rules that we follow, they stem from the U.S. Patriot Act. And I think this is like the slippery slope you're going down. On the other hand, you could say, why was it impossible for us to do any law enforcement before these rules were enacted? I don't believe it. I don't buy it. And I agree, there has to be some form of making sure that bad people don't do bad things. But we have to be very careful not to take away the freedom of individuals. And that's something that is really, really important and close to my heart.
Before the Patriot Act, when I got a bank account, I still had to establish my identity. Going back, you know, 40
yes, that's
plus
right.
years.
And I have no problem with that. I have no problem with you establishing identity with me as a customer, but I have to do way more, and I can't even tell you that I'm doing way more. Just like all the server, cloud farming service, what the stuff that they have to snoop into people's affairs.
Well, we're getting into a different topic, though.
No, why?
This argument started out as being against the idea of knowing your customer.
No.
To the tape, that you're going to find that if that wasn't your intent, it sounded that way. Augie, please go.
Obviously, because knowing your customer from my business standpoint, now I know what is behind it. It is an amazing building of regulations and enforcements that are very scary, actually, if you don't follow them. And they sound simple and good on the one side, but especially when government is involved, I think, and if it suddenly turns evil, it becomes an ability to control people's lives.
Augie, quickly, I got to get to the station.
Remember the Patriot Act? I wrote a poem on this thing. It's been read publicly, and it's been published. It's all about security in the name of liberty, and that's what the dilemma is, and that's where this is. I happen to be someone very much opposed. That should be repealed right away. But as far as regulation goes, when the threat to the fiat currencies get too great, people get together and they slam it. And that's what it's going to happen.
All right. And here, of course, the difficulty with cryptocurrencies is if you've ever used file sharing, that makes it really hard. These are, especially Bitcoin and similar currencies, they're really, really hard to regulate. They're decentralized. They're all over the
We've
place.
We've got a task force, Lennart.
Then they'll make it illegal.
All right. Time out. You're listening to WWPR, 1490 AM, Sarasota, St. Petersburg, Bradenton, Tampa Bay. All right. Two quick things, and then we'll want to get to Wall Street. Normally I would eject this from the rundown list, but it did become a topic of chat group discussion among the participants here. BitConnect's planned initial coin offering has attracted another cease and desist letter from U.S. state regulators, marking the second time this month. In a release dated January 9th, the regulators from North Carolina Securities Division outlined the temporary cease and desist, stating that BitConnect hadn't registered to deal or sell securities in the Tar Heel State. According to the release, the division determined that BitConnect had planned to sell unregistered securities in their initial coin offering, ICO, which was scheduled to launch on January 10th. Last week, the Texas State Securities Board issued a similar statement regarding BitConnect, which some critics have accused of constituting a Ponzi scheme. The BitConnect requires users to buy Bitcoin and then exchange the Bitcoin for a BitConnect coin. Investors then lend their BitConnect coins back to the company to fund the trading activities of the proprietary secret trading system that it calls volatility software, according to the Secretary of State's office. And then we could go on. Duke University law professor Lee Reiners, it's not entirely clear what they were selling, but they certainly use terms that would raise the eyebrows of any securities regulator. First of all, Lennart, is that what the BitConnect does? You have the most technical expertise here.
To be honest, I think Alex knows more about BitConnect than myself.
Okay, let's get it to Alex.
Well, what BitConnect does, I've been using it. One of my friends has over 100K in it. What BitConnect does is you lend them your Bitcoin, and then they take your Bitcoin you lent them, then they lend it out, and they also
you exchange it for their BitConnect coin.
No, you don't have to exchange none of that. There's none of that going on. What you can do is you can take your profit and put it into BitConnect coin, or just put it into Bitcoin. It's up to you. Or just leave it into U.S. dollars. There's a whole bunch of FUD around BitConnect, which is scaring a lot of people. It's not a Ponzi scheme. It's a lending platform. And lending platforms usually tend to fail. That's why it's a big risk. But it's not something you want to bet your basket on. But it's not that bad. It's not. Oh, this whole news thing is ridiculous.
Well, why would the blockchain community's Vitalik Buterin, who helped develop Ethereum and accused BitConnect of being a Ponzi scheme, does he not really know what he's doing?
He's crazy. He's the same guy who tweeted something about child porn, that child porn should be legal.
I don't know if it was something that he could make an argument for child porn being legal.
No, he said it should be legal. He said it should be legal.
Google it. On the BitConnect, and this is the when you're loaning, what they do is they allow lending margin lending. So if you want to short Bitcoin or something like that, you can borrow the Bitcoin to short it to sell on the market. This is very risky, and I'm going to say this is what happened in the housing market crash, and this is one of the things that happens in the derivatives market, which could be a huge market pullback. I'm going to say even a crash, if you have one of these exchanges go down because of margin trading, and they cannot cover the Bitcoin that people have
lost. This is limited to BitConnect, all right?
No, it's actually Bitfinex does it, BitMEX does it, and there's a few other ones.
Okay, but if they go bankrupt, it takes all their customers and themselves down, not anybody else.
That is correct. You're absolutely right. Yeah. And I'm fine with that. And as long as you understand the risks, you know, that's fine. But
we're going to have to move along. We've got to get to another break here before we get to the end of the show, and we're going to come back with what happened this week with Kodak, Overstock, and the Grayscale Bitcoin Investment Trust. You're listening to The Henry Raine Show.
If you're a business owner, you need to start listening right now to find out how a few feet of empty floor space can turn into a steady stream of both money and new faces into your business. Hosting a Bite Federal Bitcoin ATM gives you a leg up on your competition by giving your location a destination-oriented visitor that will come back time and time again. Frequent Bitcoin ATM customers become frequent shoppers in your storefront. To find out more, just call 877-855-BYTE, B-Y-T-E, or 877-855-2983, and you'll be talking to the same local business experts you've heard on The Henry Raine Show. Or just go to bitefederal.com and fill out the simple form to begin hosting a Bitcoin ATM in your business. Don't wait. Start earning new revenue and seeing new customers right away. Call 877-855-BYTE, B-Y-T-E. That's 877-855-2983, or go to bitefederal.com.
I drink a cup of coffee and start to combing out my hair. I drink 40 cups of coffee. 40 cups of coffee.
Wow, some people really love their coffee. But you'll experience much more to love than just the coffee at Mocha Joe's. The perfect spot for family and friends to relax with casual dining or enjoy the pastries and gourmet coffee shop at 3633 Cortez Road, West Bradenton. It will be love at first bite 7 days a week at Mocha Joe's. Thursday is prime rib night. Friday, all you can eat fish. And don't forget the world famous $4.99 Saturday burger night. Vegetarian? On a gluten-free diet? You won't be left out at Mocha Joe's. There's something for everybody at Mocha Joe's. 3633 Cortez Road West. Don't believe me? Then call them up and ask for yourself at 941-753-7094. Open Sunday to Wednesday for breakfast and lunch. Thursday to Saturday for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
40 cups of coffee waiting for you to come home.
this is Brian. I listen to it every week. I really like it. Me and my wife, we just stop our cars every Saturday at 12 o'clock. Make sure we listen to the show. It's great. I'm learning a lot about these cryptocurrencies. Keep on listening.
It's the Henry Rain Show here on WWPR 1490 AM. You can hear us every Saturday at 12.05 p.m. till about 1.30 or maybe even a little bit longer. And you can get the podcast site on numerous podcast platforms on demand whenever you want it. Just Google Henry Rain Show and you'll find the podcast platform of your choice there. We've got stuff about Wall Street we want to get to, but I want to make sure we don't leave out this week the coin of the week from Solis Digital Assets. SolisDigitalAssets.com. That's going to be from Alex Solis. What you got this week for us, Alex?
So I have Civic. It's the first identity crypto, you want to call it.
You bought a $3,000 Civic this week. That's what you were talking about
earlier. Don't buy Honda Civics. They're bad cars.
That's our sponsor next week. Thanks a lot.
No. They get Infinities. But the Civic is the symbol is CVC. They came out in July of last year. And what they do is they're going to help with terrorism, all that. Estonia already uses this technology. The whole country uses it. A lot of Europe is using this for the immigrants and all that. It's the new way to identify someone. It's like the new social security number, a new way to store your data. You can go on civic.com and use your technology now if you want to try it. And I think it's one of the greatest.
Say the function of it again, please.
It's identification. It's a way to store your identification.
And how are people currently using it, other than that?
In Estonia, they use it's totally new. It's like your ID on the blockchain. And it's a cheaper way to identify people.
And it's private. I mean, not private. Privately owned. It's not public. It's not tied to the Estonia government.
No.
Decentralized. It's a decentralized.
Do they actually really have a product already? I was wondering about that. No.
It's still in development. What
is?
The platform is still in development.
The Civic.
The coin's there and the wallet's there. But
no, Civic.com. Go there. You could sign up. You could do it now. Don't listen to Andy. I'm just kidding.
Okay. So you've signed up. So what was the next step once you signed up?
You upload your ID and all that stuff. Estonia, the whole country uses this technology already.
To
identify their citizens. All their citizens.
So
are
it is
their,
tied with the government.
No. The government uses this technology, not this company.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll have to sort through that later.
It sounds like a federal ID.
Yeah. That's basically what they do. It's a new way to do IDs.
Like a public-private partnership, but at least on one aspect of it. But we'll have to come back to it as you tell us how much money you've made on it in the weeks to come. All right. Speaking of making money this week, some people did. Kodak, a company that seemed dead and gone, is trading around $3 a share when this news came out. Gone with the advent of digital photography, just saw a surge Monday as it announced the creation of its own cryptocurrency, the so-called Kodak coin, which would be the token that it powers the company's new Kodak One platform, will allow photographers to register their images, license them, and search the web for unauthorized usage. Their CEO, Jeff Clark, explained, "For many in the tech industry, blockchain and cryptocurrency are hot buzzwords, but for photographers who long struggled to assert control over their work and how it's used, these buzzwords are the key to solving what felt like an unsolvable problem. Kodak has always sought to democratize photography and make licensing fair to artists. These technologies give blah, 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 blah." And this is, though, when you look at it, much different than Long Island Iced Tea Company becoming Long Blockchain with all their iced tea expertise moving into blockchain. Some of the things about this, well, let me just give you the highlights. On the news, the stock jumped to over $4. By the close of the business day, it was around $7. It reached a high the next morning of over $13, and on Friday's close, it was trading about $9. They've also announced that they have their own mining rigs that they've licensed out, that someone's marketing, et cetera. But where this truly has significance is that the CEO in another interview was talking about how they have 130 years of images that they own. They also can now offer this to other photographers. They said that Google or Facebook or the online companies now take the lion's share of the royalties that are used from these. So this gets them all the way off of that. It makes them the blockchain is the vendor of the creative content. and the receiver of the royalties that distributes them all through the blockchain. So I actually see this. I don't know if it justifies the stock price even at $9, but it certainly seems like a direction that a company like Kodak could go that will add value to them.
You know, there was this is one thing that is going to. That is really going to be a game changer, and a lot of people. I know
that's a good thing.
Well, the libertarian view is this is all going to be some open source, you know, thing.
Right.
The reality is big corporations are going to come in and they are going to use these open source codes for their own use. I mean, you're pretty much crowdfunding with some of these smaller coins. You're crowdfunding the development of these codes, and then they can come back and use them. There was a coin out there that was. Actually directed towards this, and I think it was AdX, or there was one that was specifically marketed towards for the photo media. And now you're seeing the corporations come in, and that's where you're going to see a lot of these coins go away.
Art theft is an old problem. I mean, I've had things stolen from me, seriously, costing me a lot of money. And I was with a company one time, and they simply changed the names of the artists around me and took away my royalty money.
Sabine. Let me get to you because you're a content creator. Your field is romance novelist and literature. Can you see how this might be something that would adapt to your field?
Absolutely. In my wildest dreams, it would be something that would be used to get out from under the 800-pound gorilla known as Amazon. Authors in particular are pretty much stuck there, and I would love to see something happen along those lines.
Wait for Amazon coin.
Right? Yeah. We got something in the works there.
Well, wait a minute. Okay, so right now you have a product that is marketed through Amazon.
Yes.
To Lennart's comment, why couldn't Amazon adopt a blockchain technology to distribute royalties for the sales of her
It literature. Depends how things are going, but I could see every company that's listed on the stock market have their own ICOs and coins for reward points, securities, or whatever else. But the content, especially the content distribution or micropayments for smaller activities, that's a really a big, interesting, super interesting topic, because you don't want to necessarily have subscriptions for something you don't use all the time, and with little micropayments maybe automatically paid, or you could have even a much better sharing economy if you think about it.
Isn't that yours.org does that, right? I mean, upvoting basically with micropayments.
Yeah, I'm on yours.org, and anybody that wants to go to yours.org and contribute to the show would be happy to accept that, but it leaves a lot to be desired as far as...
We need to get Bitbean on there, because I love Bitbean. That's definitely a microprocessing payment there. I mean, the Bitbean.
Don't listen to this guy.
No. The bean.
No.
Anyway, but it leaves a lot to be desired in the visual of how it presents. It's a little bit of a rough user interface there. I told Alex that I would have the vehicle for him to move his toes into the financial diversity of the stock market. And one of the things that we will be talking about on January 27th with our guest is all the considerations about your taxes with your cryptocurrency trading. Right now, there's although I haven't tested the platform yet, I've heard of BitTax.com, which hopefully you can import your trades from some of the different exchanges, but I'm sure not all the ones Alex has dealt with in the course of a year, or some of the other people in the studio. But if you have a regular stock exchange company, a Merrill Lynch, an E-Trade, or something like that, they're going to be able to print you out your capital gains and losses at the end of the year with just a click of a couple buttons, which is an attractive feature of all that, something that wasn't always available. One story before I go into Grayscale that we didn't get to was the hypergrowth of the cryptocurrency exchange Binance, which is not a U.S. exchange. And people that are on some of these exchanges that aren't U.S.-based have to be aware of the, I believe it's called FBAR, F-B-A-R rules. Are you familiar with those, Lennart? Okay. What's the actual acronym? Do you know?
I think Financial Bank.
Foreign Bank?
Foreign Bank.
Yeah. Anyway, any...
Regulation, the IRS regulation.
Any account that you have outside, and it's not just bank accounts, it's cryptocurrency accounts outside the U.S., of $10,000 at any time in the course of the year. So if you made one trade and it went up over $10,000 and then you get it off that exchange, you still have to report that at the end of the year on your taxes. A mistake, and a non-intentional mistake, is going to cost you a $10,000 fine right away. A intentional mistake is going to be a $100,000 fine. So we will be dealing with that on the show in 2 weeks when we have the CPA discussing cryptocurrency, and we'll be dealing with that at the meetup. So anyway, let's go to the Grayscale Investment Bitcoin Investment Trust, GB. I don't know. I have to get the symbol for you later. Let's just go. It's splitting in a way that most stocks never split. Let's go to courtesy of CNBC with the news.
Some traders say the high price of the Bitcoin Investment Trust was prepping people out. It is up 1,700% over the past 1 year. This 91-for-1 stock split will bring down the share price from about $1,900 to $20 a share. Bitcoin Investment Trust has largely benefited from the rise in the underlying price of Bitcoin, which has resulted in more mainstream interest in Bitcoin. But not all investors are supportive. Merrill Lynch has banned its financial advisors from pitching this product to clients due to concerns around suitability and eligibility. And while this trust is traded on the OTC market, the goal is to be on a larger platform like the NYSE. Grayscale pulled its ETF application with the exchange late last year over fears of being rejected by the SEC.
Well, it's traded in the Overton. GBTC is, I believe, the symbol of that. And in the news article, it says it gained 15% on Friday, but that really wasn't on the news because the market gained. The cryptocurrency market was gaining similar to 15% there, too. Anyway, the stock, the exchange-traded fund of the stock, was trading at around $2,000, so you're going to be able to buy it for around $21. It trades at a premium, but as the owner has said, he expects the premium to shrink, but that to continue to appreciate and be the most mainstream way of investing in Bitcoin. 2 weeks ago, we played the CEO of ARK Investing, which is the only fund that is invested in this, the first and only fund that's invested in this, and the returns that they have made. So you were shaking your head, Alex, but go ahead. You make your comments, and then I'll respond.
On GBTC, I don't know. I don't really like the stock market at all. The money, you can't make money fast enough. I was going to buy stock. I buy a McDonald's stock and favorite company, but I really want a franchise. I want to buy a franchise of business, passive income. I don't have to go back to work. I could just work for my business. Like Andy, he's got a great restaurant. You know, he could fall back on that.
Yeah, you don't ever work there, right?
Yeah, never. With the Bitcoin investment fund, what that actually allowed is larger institutions to buy Bitcoin without having to buy it directly because they are limited as to what they can invest into. So that's what that allowed them to. Absolutely. And I think they have a vault in Switzerland or something that was a nuclear fallout shelter that they've converted to a safe. But that's what it has allowed people to do. As it becomes regulated in the United States, and what I mean by regulated is the exchanges handle it, and you're allowed to trade futures contracts on it. I think you're going to see that those types of things go to the wayside because you don't need them anymore.
Well, I think what you'll see is the premium shrink, as both the ownership and observers have said that. But as far as something that creates an ease of access for the average retail investor, I think it still is going to serve its utility.
Didn't the New York Stock Exchange say something? They wanted to set up some ETFs. Was it this week or last week?
Well, that was a story that we didn't have room for this week. And, you know, as this story said, they're hoping this will help them move up to the New York Stock Exchange. The owner was on following this, and he had some interesting things to say about their other products that they're introducing besides this. Let's hear from him. He is Michael Schonesheim, I believe I'm pronouncing his name right.
Can this deviate from net asset value? Has it done so quite substantially? And what would the stock split mean for that?
So we did announce the stock split, and historically, publicly quoted shares of the Bitcoin Investment Trust have traded at a premium to the net asset value. But I think more importantly is for investors to know that the product is available for purchase at the daily net asset value to really any accredited investor who wants to participate in the fund.
What do you think about the Merrill move when they said, look, we don't trust this, we don't trust the fiduciary responsibility we have, so we emphasize that so much. We don't want our brokers selling people your product.
I think that Bitcoin and the digital currency asset class as a whole, we all can clearly agree, does not come without its risks. And so we are working collaboratively.
It might have a little bit to do with Merrill Lynch's parent company, Bank of America, getting ready to introduce their own cryptocurrency exchange and line of funds. But we'll let him continue here.
With BAML and really any other firm out there that needs educational resources to understand the asset class better. I think ultimately what we're seeing, and certainly based on the trading volumes that we're experiencing in the Bitcoin Investment Trust, that there's clearly quite a bit of demand for this product. There are certain days now when the notional volume of the Bitcoin Investment Trust actually eclipses that of the Spider Gold ETF, which, as you know, is an instrument that not just individual investors use, but obviously many financial advisors.
Michael, for legal reasons, Michael, you can't discuss the ETF withdrawal, but how do you see the cryptocurrency market evolving if larger, more sophisticated products can come to the market because the SEC won't allow them to?
I think it's really just a matter of time. I mean, my team is squarely focused on product creation and trying to bring more investment products to the investment community for digital currencies that they're looking to participate in. As I think you know, Sima, we also operate the Ethereum Classic Investment Trust and the Zcash Investment Trust. The Ethereum Classic vehicle, we're actually already working to transition into the public markets later this year, which will bring yet another availability for investors to express a view on a digital currency through the purchase of a security.
Michael, lastly, do you see the appeal of investing in Bitcoin going away as these other cryptocurrencies come to market, like Ripple and Litecoin?
Well, I think what we're trying to ascertain at all times is the types of digital currencies that investors want exposure to. We're continuing to build out the product suite because investors are asking.
Okay. Well, he's going to give his little wrap up there. There was Michael Schonenschein and Sima Modi on CNBC. But I was surprised when I first heard it. They already have products they're offering people that we don't know about. I guess hedge fund managers and things like that that can do that. But I would think if he's offering Ethereum, he's going to go to Bitcoin Cash, he's going to go into the other ones, and it still bodes well for the pricing of those individual cryptocurrencies.
Here's one issue with it. Even with these coming out for institutional investors and that, they cannot hedge against the long with using these trades, unless they just go ahead and sell they sell futures contracts. So the market needs to mature, and we are not at that point yet where we have enough products where you can get institutional and Wall Street money coming in. They do not want to come in unless they can hedge. And so when everyone's calling for the bubble, this is a clear sign that the bubble's not happening because there is no big money in this market yet. When that happens is when you're really going to see the boom. And I am sold on that. That's why I got in this market to begin with, because I was an old gold guy like Augie over here. And I saw the potential that when Wall Street gets in here and they can hedge, that it's to the moon. I mean, it really is.
Well, one thing that I'm thinking about and looking at this, you know, as we talked in the very earliest part of the show, if you're talking about the percentage of your portfolio you're holding, and so many of us would probably say that we have Bitcoin that we're just holding. I would consider taking that. Of course, there'd be a capital gains issue there. So, if that weren't part of the equation, I would want to move it into this if the premium was reasonable. Because if it moves to the New York Stock Exchange, there's a couple ifs here. You'd be able to sell covered calls against it. You'd be able then it'll then also become an optionable product that you can buy or sell your calls or puts. There's a lot that this could be the first vehicle allows more traditional investors to take advantage of a lot of different aspects of cryptocurrency.
Well, even with that aspect, and Leonard has a company, and one of the issues is with capital gains is I see a pullback coming in the market. I'm hesitant to sell my Bitcoin because I'm going to have to pay capital gains on that. Options and futures contracts provide an alternate means for me to go short without selling my asset and taking those and taking that capital gains by selling calls, naked calls against it, or buying puts against it. So I mean, I can do one or the other. So once that comes out, that's going to open a door for larger institutional investors that do not want to just be open naked long.
Does anybody else want to get in on this before I go to the last Wall Street topic of the week? Looks like everybody's okay on that. And the other thing I wanted to talk about as far as Wall Street investment plays for cryptocurrency, Overstock has had a great run on their stock, but they didn't just say they were going to put blockchain in their name. They were early adopter of allowing cryptocurrency payments. But they actually have a venture capital fund, which I don't think any of us at the retail level of investor has access to a venture capital fund that's investing in blockchain products. Well, Lennart, maybe he does. Do you?
I'll just make up my own.
Oh, well, some of us aren't at that level of expertise or resourcefulness. But I'm thinking, and this would be a long-term play, that this could even wind up like not the size of Google, but the way Google spun off some of their other enterprises on this stock. I can see them spinning off the Medici subsidiary that they have on this. You want to?
That's the exchange, right? The blockchain-based exchange that they built.
Well, there's like 10 different projects that are
Well, Patrick Byrne has been on this really, really early. As a libertarian, he kind of saw Bitcoin coming early on and directed Overstock totally to take advantage of cryptocurrencies.
All right. Well, let's hear from him, and it's just a couple minutes. Anybody that wants to comment, just let me know so I can pause the audio here.
Our next guest is betting big on blockchain and Bitcoin. He's the CEO of Overstock.com, which is up about 30%
since
he launched the Bitcoin business. Patrick Byrne with us again. You, sir, I don't know where you are right now. I see mountains in the background there. You are betting the farm on blockchain, aren't you? You're betting the entire firm on blockchain.
Well, I would amend one thing you said, Stuart, that I've been on blockchain for 4 years. We were the first company over $1 million to take Bitcoin. We were at $1.5 billion. We've been a very key player in the blockchain revolution and have made six fundamental investments that we wanted to own and in six specific areas, and we've gone out and made these investments.
Yeah,
so it's all starting to pay off.
I will think of you as an online retailer. Are you out of the retail business?
No, not at all. We love our business, and one of the great, there's different ways of seeing it. You know, there's an old saying they used to say in business schools that if the train industry in the 1850s or 1880s had understood it was in the transportation business and not in the train business, they would have become the car industry. Well, that example used to mean a lot more a couple decades ago.
Explain to me how Overstock...
Hey, man, Augie's shaking his head. Now, you remember those days, Augie?
I go back that far, sure. That's the biggest bunch of nonsense I've ever heard. That if you buy a pistol, it becomes a carbine. I mean, that's transmorphogenic nonsense is old arguments. And what you really have is a product. Right now, the Chinese would say bull. And
wait a minute. The train industry in the U.S.,
right.
And by the way, that wasn't entrepreneurial. That was a socialist project of the United States by giving away the land to the companies. It was a state-directed project once it became beyond the local areas. For those
it people. Always is.
Yeah. So we can talk about that some other time, I guess, because we're short on time. But they wanted nothing to do with the auto industry. And I'm sure you've talked about a time when there was a subway system in Los Angeles and the auto industry wanted to make
and
sure
that never
happened.
And they're putting it all back today.
Let's stay with the historical analogy
right,
here.
Sure.
So the train industry didn't invest in the auto industry. It was a bunch of startups, and it got usurped as the mode of transportation of choice. So why are you shaking your head that is an invalid point?
Well, in the 1880s, which is what you're talking about, if I recall him saying, right?
He didn't specify.
I thought he said the 1800s. Not the
well, it was a transitional thing.
Well, the 19th century, right? The point is that what killed the rail system was not the automobile; it was the removal of the streetcar, all the electrical system, which all the advanced countries use today. And so it was really a suppression of one industry for another, because the auto industry was going to come in. They offered people buses for communities. It was a real governmental corporate betrayal of transport.
Well, if you read his point, like I was reading it, if they had their research and development working in the car industry because they were a transportation company, in the same way Google is working on things that aren't related to their search engine,
well,
that they would have been the ones to benefit.
Yeah,
let's finish this up on what he has to say in the here and now.
.com makes money out of blockchain technology. How does the money flow to you?
Well, the main event is what's happened is we created a group called Medici within Overstock. It's like a venture capital group run by a good friend of mine, Jonathan Johnson. It's a venture capital group that has made 11 blockchain investments. Two of them we've spun up in our own company. One of them you may have seen announced a couple of weeks ago, Hernando de Soto, the great Peruvian economist, and I, we think we can kind of crack poverty in 5 years. We've spun up as an incubator within our own shop that business. We have the leading business on blockchain meets capital markets. It's called T0. The leading business in the world on blockchain meets central banking. It's called Bit.com. It's down in Barbados. We own significant chunks, 30 to 80% of these different businesses. And then another. So that's how we make money. Those businesses are starting to have tremendous.
Okay.
T0 is going through an ICO now, a $300 million ICO.
When you were on the show last time, the stock was about 65. Now you're at 81. I can't resist a question on the overall market. You know, the old market, you know, the regular Wall Street stock market. We're at 25,721 as we speak.
Okay. He's going to ask him to make a prediction on the stock market in general, which you can go online to find that out. Anybody have an opinion about Overstock that they want to?
Let me address Augie's comment there on the railroads. The railroads didn't go away. You still have huge railroad companies. What transportation did was get rid of the crappy ones, and the strong ones survived, and they still survive to this day. And it's the same thing with cryptocurrencies.
I think you're overstatements there, but
there's still Kansas Southern, Union
no,
Pacific.
Your premise is right, but okay. I don't think you're
well. The same thing with cryptocurrencies. The crappy currencies like the Zimbabwe, whatever it is, the ruble, the real. I mean, Venezuela's currency. They're going to go by the wayside. They're not going to exist anymore. I don't think the euro and the dollar are going anywhere, or the yen or the won. But some of the crappy currencies are going to cease to exist, and you're going to see a amorphous of cryptocurrency.
It's going to be an interesting competition, especially when you see what are central banks going to do with regard to cryptocurrencies when people start, you know, shifting their assets.
Well, the modern societies require communication, and communication in terms of currency, in talking, it can be all variety of things, flying and rail. And means of getting from here to here. In Germany right now, you take the ICE train from Berlin to Czechoslovakia, and they have business conferences on that train. They stop in Prague or wherever, and they have dinner there, and they have dinner and lunch and so forth on the train. That is one conference train. So communication shows up in a variety of modern societies use transportation in a modern way. We are, pardon me, idiots here.
All right. Well, that will almost be the last word for the show, but I do want to come back to the other side, let people wrap up with anything that might be going on with them, and also remind you the meetup, January 27th at Mocha Joe's, 3:30. We'll tell you more about that in the weeks to come. Sabine, what's going on in your world?
Same old for the most part. I will have an announcement probably in a couple weeks once I get the details sorted out. So keep
on your website
for that. I'm not quite sure yet. It has partial to do with an identity crisis. So once we figure out which direction we're going to go, then I'll let you know.
In the meantime, people should be going to your website.
Oh yes,
go to
my website, www.sabinepriestley.com, or just go to the 800-pound gorilla Amazon and search for Sabine. You'll find my books there.
Alex, what's up in your world?
You know, I just got over a big cold. I'm just taking it easy, and I'm writing a book and helping people out. You know.
Living, I guess.
That's something. The first part was not the self promotion that we were handing up to you on a silver platter, but the book thing was good. And so, SolusDigitalAssets.com and on Facebook to keep up with whatever you're doing. Augie?
What am I doing? I'm watching you guys. I was in a conversation with a technician, mathematics technician, who happens to be my brother-in-law, who worked at Dow Chemical for years. And thinks this Bitcoin thing is a great big question mark.
Okay. Bernard, what's going on with Byte Federal?
Well, expanding new offices and new staff members, so we're growing, which is great.
ByteFederal.com, B-Y-T-E.
Yep. Yeah, take a look. Also, if you happen to be in Miami, 18th, 19th, we're at the show. We have our own little booth, Bitcoin Miami show.
By the way, hi to Bruce that was on the Facebook. I said would say hi, and I didn't get around to him.
Hi, Bruce.
And also next week, I haven't told you all this yet, so you and the audience will find out at the same time. Hopefully, since three-quarters of us or two-thirds of us are going to be down in Miami and I won't be back here in time on Saturday, we're going to try and put together a show down there. If I get a new laptop with the editing software on it to take with me, we will achieve that, and I'm pretty sure we are. So we will do that. So next week's show, we'll have, if everything works out for in our favor, a combination of interviews and topics from the North American Bitcoin Conference, and we'll follow up maybe with one of the topics I've talked about on that before. We'll be back one way or another next week with a Henry Raines show.
The CIA, the Bloods, the Crips, and the KKK.